You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks, this is the final podcast of 2017. 2017 is coming to a close, and what better way to close out the year with comic talk? That's right, folks, we're looking at an artist who is basically, to some, a master, to some, he has been like somebody who has not wrapped up his work, you know, should have stopped 10, 15 years ago, or others he's like, you know, oh, yeah, I've heard of the guy. He did that? Wow. We're, of course, talking about Frank Miller. Frank Miller, very divisive person in the comic industry, just depending on who you talk to. And we have a great crew to talk all about him this week. It should be kind of cool to look for our artist spotlight. And then march forward, and of course, marching forward, what better way to end the year with my co-host, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you this week, sir?
I am ready for this year to be over and to turn that big old page into 2018.
Can't believe 2018. I remember when we were God, that's the future. That's the far future. Just think, we're 2 years away from 2020.
That's true.
So it's just weird.
Is that going to be a weird year where Hugh Downs like traps a lot of people and doing bad things?
That would just be a normal year in Washington, D.C. So I could totally see that being the case, or that, or everyone's vision will be perfect in that year.
Well, Well, you know, it's been, obviously, you know, 2017, full of a lot of highs, full of a lot of lows, you know, depending on how you ended up, you know, whether you had more highs or lows. It's just one of those things where it's crazy, but it's you get to that end of the year and, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a great way to just, great thing, excuse to just start over. Like say, okay, now January, new month, new year, let's go.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Let's run with it. Let's see what we can do. And, you know, new years always start fresh, optimistic, and man, I'm ready to click 2017 right by the wayside. Get rid of it. And that actually leads into my rant and rave for this week. You know, we've been seeing a lot of movies, we've been seeing a lot of TV and such, and, you know, next week is going to be, you know, our review episode, so we're not going to touch on 2017. But Mr. Mike, what are you most looking forward to for 2018?
What I'm most looking forward to in 2018? Ooh, good question. Well, obviously, like you said, a lot of movies, a lot of TV, a lot of stuff like that happening, because we're a pop culture podcast, so... You know, we've already got, scheduled through ESO topics through September, right? Or even in, well, not yet, not quite October, because I know I haven't done the Halloween ones yet. So I think we're because we know all these movies and other things are going to come out. So obviously, there's a lot of movies like that. But I want to get off the movies for a second because I know we'll get back to them. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, 2 years ago, I was obsessed with Westworld, the TV show. That comes back in 2018. I cannot wait. It's been a long suffering year for me without my Westworld this year. But I am really looking forward to seeing what Nolan and company have in store for us, because I enjoyed the first series so much. I'm hoping that we just get more fun, interesting, thought-provoking stuff with season two.
Oh, definitely. I think Westworld was truly groundbreaking, and it was neat. God, I can't believe it was in 2016 that we were watching it. It was just amazing. And the way they ended it, the show can go anywhere. And that was one of the things I loved about it. And it, there's so much fun to be had in that whole new world. Maybe they'll start explaining what the world is and, you know, where the park is. And there's, like we had in our panel at Dragon Con, one of the big questions is, you know, what next? You know, now that the replicants can, you know, kill humans, is that going to make it just doubly exciting? You know, you have to, you know, for people to come to the park, is it going to become more free for all? What's going to happen?
I like to play the speculation game occasionally as well, but if there's one thing that 2017, especially the tail end of 2017, has taught me, is that, you know, if you put a lot of time and effort into projecting and expecting what's to come in TV shows and movies, and you don't get your way, man, there's a lot of like bitterness there. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, we all got to just go, well, you know, it's a movie, it's a TV show, it's entertainment, it's, you know, thought provoking, sure. But at the end of the day, I don't think we should, you know, speculate too much. So I try not to speculate too much on a lot of that stuff, because I just want to let it happen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's interesting to see what could happen. Just let's have fun with it.
There's when Westworld comes out, and like, if they just stay in the Western world again, if they just do that, no matter how good it is, people are going to crap on it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because they're like, no, we're supposed to see this world and this world and this world and this world. And then we're going to see it's like, no, there's one thing you can guarantee. We're going to see a lot of boobs, and it's going to be thought provoking. So that's what I'm speculating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I was going to make some jokes there, but you know, let's move on. It could have been really bad. So, but yeah, Westworld, I'm definitely looking forward to. 2018 is also going to be bringing an end to Game of Thrones.
So they say. They keep like kind of wishy-washy, like pushing the premiere date back and back and back. I expect it in next year as well, but until we get a final date as to when it's going to premiere, look, I'm not ready for that show to end either, but I don't want to wait a year and a half either. So, yeah, I'm hoping that it's in 2018. And yeah, that's going to be another one that's got a lot of pressure on it, because people were already leery about this past year because, you know, so everybody's read the books. We're all in uncharted territory. So, and as things start to come together, we're just not used to that as Game of Thrones fans. You know, we're used to things being broken apart and people dying and, you know, expectations being dashed as to what's going to happen and everybody is safe. Well, this is going to have to come to a conclusion. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they wrap it up and satisfy us without really, you know, that's the thing about Game of Thrones. Do you really want to be satisfied?
Mm-mm. I would be shocked if anyone survives. You know, and then at the final scene, it'll be, you know, Arianna taking a face off of somebody or something like that. You know, she has no name type thing. Or either that or, you know, wouldn't it be kind of cool if the White Walkers win or something like that? Just, you know, a totally depressing ending. You know.
You never know.
Exactly. With that show, no. You never know.
Hey, the first shot we ever saw in Game of Thrones, the very first scene was a White Walker. So maybe the last scene will be a White Walker as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So
bring it on. The whole series has just been about the rise of the White Walkers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We've been fooling you with the whole thing about Westeros.
Everything else was just whatever. That's stuff for them to conquer.
Exactly. Tease, you know, just make you feel sorry for their victims. That's it.
So I understand that we will get another Daredevil season in Netflix in 2018. So that's pretty exciting.
Also Jessica Jones season 2.
Jessica Jones. Yes. Yes. I am excited for that. I think out of all the Netflix Marvel shows that the Jessica Jones one remains my favorite.
Okay. So, I actually finished Iron Fist, so I'm starting to get caught up.
Oh, very cool.
Yes.
Very cool.
So it wasn't as bad as people said that it was.
And we're also going to have a new doctor in 2018.
That's right.
And we got to wait till the tail end, but still, she's coming.
She is coming. We were introduced to her on Christmas night. And, yeah. you know, oh, brilliant was her first words.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, welcome, you know, it's going to be awesome to see Jodie's doctor and see what they do with her and, you know, how it goes through. I'm very much looking forward to that. And, you know, I'm just looking to see where they go. We're having Black Lightning come to the screen.
Absolutely. That's happening this, January, right? Like, it's right around the corner.
Exactly. So you're going to get that sooner than later. And
we've got X-Files coming right around the corner.
That's true. So you got some great things coming. And, you know, you also have Titans coming in 2018.
Yes. I think that's on a pay service, right?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that's on a streaming service. So I'm not sure. That and Young Justice. So I'm not sure, you know, if I'll be able to watch that right away. But certainly I'm keen to see it. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It'll be very interesting to see what characters they're allowed to use, what they're not allowed to use, and if Cyborg is going to be on it or if he's forbidden because of Justice League. Because I know Green Arrow or just Arrow just lost Deathstroke.
They can't, again.
Again. So they can't use him. Thanks, Justice League. And so
they just brought him back.
I know. And It was a lot of fun to see what's coming up with that. And there's just so much happening. I'm curious to see where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. goes, because I have not been very impressed with the space story so far. I did like the last episode where, but spoilers if you haven't watched this week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where Fritz comes back.
Yeah, I think this was the one that really taught me that I must really be a Fitz fan, because I was like, this has been my favorite show of the season, the episode of the season.
Me too.
So I must be a Fitz fan. So
mm-hmm. Exactly. So I was, you know, slightly impressed with that. You know, are there any comics or anything you're looking forward to, Mikey? Because I'm not really reading them right now.
Sure. You know, Metal's going to wrap up. Doomsday Clock is continuing. So DC is going along and doing stuff. I think, Amazing Spider-Man fans are going to be in for a little transition period, because Dan Slott is going to end his run on, Amazing Spider-Man, which has been amazing, literally and figuratively, pun intended. And so I'd be really curious. I don't think they've announced yet who will be writing Amazing Spider-Man. So I'm curious as to how that's going to play out. And, you know, we'll see what I think it's been announced that Bendis's first work for DC will be Superman. So I think that's confirmed. I'm not sure. So that's going to be pretty exciting. Mm, so
it should
in the
be
world
interesting
of,
to see
in the world of the big two, we've definitely got some exciting things happening. But, you know, obviously, if you're going to speak about Marvel, if you're going to speak about superheroes, if you're going to speak about big events happening in 2018, I don't think you can get any bigger than Infinity War. I think that's the big event, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, I mean, this is where we've all been heading. All the Marvel movies, ever since that first Iron Man movie, every single one of the Marvel movies has been heading to this movie. No pressure. But it better be spectacular.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It should be awesome to see. And you're also going to get Ant-Man and Wasp coming, Black Panther in just 2 months.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we're going to get 3 Marvel movies yes. next year. And I believe two DC movies. I'm not confirmed on that. I know that I believe we're supposed to get Aquaman.
Yes. Aquaman is supposed to be in the fall.
Yeah, so maybe it's just the one.
I think so, because I don't think you're getting Suicide Squad 2 or any of the other things. But, you know, it should be just interesting to see, you know, how Aquaman could hold up on the big screen. I wasn't that impressed with his character in Justice League. So I don't know. I'll go in with an open mind, but, you know, maybe I'll be floored. I'll be impressed. I'll go, wow, I was eating crow once again.
We're going to have more Star Wars.
Oh, you get Solo.
We're going to go back to the beginning, at least the beginning of Han Solo. So there's going to be a Star Wars movie coming out.
Yes, today they actually released the first images.
Yes, I did see some of those. So they are taking advantage of, I know, like, you know, the Last Jedi's been divisive. So we'll see if Solo continues that trend or if it smooths things over.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting because, like, with Solo, I was watching it, like, seeing the pictures. And the first pictures I saw, if it wasn't for Chewbacca, I thought, oh, new Firefly. Awesome. So sorry, well, sorry, Brown Coats.
To those characters. Yes, there's a lot to be said for that. So, so yeah, a lot of good stuff on the big screen, a lot of good stuff on the small screen. You know, personally, I think that 2018 has a lot of potential. I know that we are going to do some big things with the podcast next year. We're just about ready to announce some stuff. So going into January, or as a matter of fact, our next episode, I think, we'll have some news on some stuff that's happening with our network. And we've already got like a lot of convention dates planned for that ESO is going to participate in. So I'm looking forward to those too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We have tons of conventions, more this year coming up than I think we've done in the last couple. So it should be, you know, a pretty interesting spring and summer and probably fall for us. And, you know, definitely we're looking forward to seeing everybody out there and, you know, introducing new people to the podcast, but also, you know, being up there and actually moderating and getting more involved with that, with different conventions.
Yeah, I think you'll find us at least 5 conventions prior to the summer we'll be participating in actively. So we'll announce those in our next con report as we can, as the news comes out. But yeah, we'll be recording panels and doing panels, helping moderate panels for at least, to my count, 5 conventions in the next 5 or 6 months.
Oh gosh, I hope my credit card could take that. Think of all the pop figures I can find.
Oh boy.
Yes. It'll be interesting to see, and I'm looking forward to it. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's just a great experience. I love going to cons, love hanging with Mike, but I also love just going to shows and just meeting you out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Meeting the listeners never gets old for me. It never gets tired. I'm really curious as to what people like about the show. I'm really curious as to why the hell they listen to us, because I can't figure it out.
I go through that one every week, so it's okay.
Exactly. It's like, what is it that is, why? Why do you listen to us? That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad. For mm-hmm. it.
As you know, Maui said in Moana, you're welcome. Thank you. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great way to thank the fans. And I've got some projects coming up, you know, as far as New Legend goes. We've got 4 books right now that were in production this year. So hopefully they will see publication next year. It's obviously too early to know, but if I can come out with a majority of them out in 2018, I'll be very happy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It should be interesting to see. We as ESO have a lot going on that we'll be revealing probably in the next few weeks, actually, of stuff that's going on. So, you know, we have a lot of different projects happening, and, you know, we're going to be talking about it and blabbing about it all the time. So, you know, definitely stuff to look forward to. So, you know, definitely, you know, like we said, as always in each episode, we want to hear from you. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what you're looking forward to for 2018. We definitely would love to hear it. With that being said, let's take a break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We actually don't necessarily have any new movies to talk about this week. That's because it's a bit of an unusual week at the box office in that we're just coming off the Christmas holiday. So a lot of the movies that premiered either a couple days before Christmas or on Christmas are going to be continuing playing throughout this week. We're not going to see a lot of new activity for the New Year's holiday just because those other movies are going to continue occupying the box office. Star Wars The Last Jedi will probably continue to dominate, and there are several other new ones that are both vying to gain attention as family fare, and also some Oscar hopefuls as we enter Academy Awards season as well. So we'll just touch on several of the movies that have come out around Christmas time and will continue to be playing this weekend. Some of them look pretty good if you're looking for a good movie to watch to ring in the new year. First, we have Darkest Hour, which is about British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and stars Gary Oldman. This one touches on the early days of World War II and would actually make for a pretty interesting pairing with Christopher Nolan's World War II thriller Dunkirk, which recently came out on DVD. We also have the movie All the Money in the World, which is a true story about the kidnapping of teenager John Paul Getty III and involves a disagreement over paying the ransom for that kidnapping. This movie gained attention in that Kevin Spacey originally starred in it, and then all his scenes were cut and reshot in a short amount of time. However, it appears that that process actually went pretty smoothly, and this is getting good reviews, so it will be interesting to see what this one does at Academy Awards time. We also have the movie Molly's Game, another true story about an Olympic-level skier running a high-stakes poker match. So, sounds kind of interesting. And in terms of more family-friendly movies, we have the remake-reboot Jumanji. Now, when I first heard about this movie, I was kind of like, really? Are they going to be making another one? It just didn't feel quite right. But then I actually saw the previews and thought they looked kind of funny. But still, you're a little hesitant because you know sometimes with comedies, they show the funniest parts in the trailers. But actually, this one is hitting about a 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it looks like critics have responded pretty well to this one. And I do like that they're doing a little bit different premise where they have famous actors like Dwayne The Rock Johnson playing the avatars within the Jumanji video game of just the regular kids who are playing the video game. So this one looks like it might be a pleasant surprise. So I'm looking forward to hopefully catching this one soon. We also have Pitch Perfect 3, which is a continuation in the surprise hit comedy series about a cappella singers. Didn't really get that great reviews from critics, but may still be fun for fans who want to tune in to hear the music and see these characters again. We also have Hugh Jackman's circus musical, The Greatest Showman. This one also didn't do so great with critics. But again, if you're looking for some feel-good, fun, holiday-type movies, you might still have a good time at this one. And on DVD this week, not really a whole lot. We have The Mountain Between Us, which is a romantic adventure drama, or dramatic romantic adventure, one of those, about two strangers who survive a plane crash on a mountain. And then we also have the sci-fi remake, Flatliners, which is about medical students who become addicted to near-death experiences. This one didn't really make a huge splash at the box office, and I think it's probably going to come and go pretty quietly on DVD as well. And that's it for this week. I hope everyone had a great 2017 at the movies. Lots of great movies coming our way in 2018 as well. And in the meantime, if you're looking for some more entertainment content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the Geek Seek segment, and we have a new guest with us this week. We have Daniel Suddis with us. Met Daniel at DragonCon. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Welcome to the station, sir. For those people who may not know you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I could lie and say that I'm an international shark fighter and make myself sound more interesting, but that's not quite accurate. I worked a lot with Nick Hoffman on the Myopia show, so Myopia Defend Your Childhood. In fact, we were recording one a little earlier today. And I also do a column, well, more of an article on popdose.com. Comes out every month. Hopefully in the new year, I'll be able to do some a little more frequently than that. And I also keep a blog at thecornercritic.wordpress.com.
Wow, that's a lot to do.
Somehow I even managed to get a full-time job in there, so.
Where would you say, you know, I mean, I know that we all have different interests, but where do you have a main sort of focus of geekdom? Like, where would you say your main genre or even franchise is?
That's a good question. I usually stick to a more American and British sci-fi when it comes to that sort of thing. The one thing I've never really gotten into is anime, like, at all.
Okay.
So there are a couple exceptions, as with anything, but I would say shows like Doctor Who and Buffy and Mystery Science Theater 3000 would be my top geek picks when it comes to the stuff that really influenced my geek media tastes.
Very nice. Very nice. And do you find them inspiring in your normal everyday life?
Well, it's the greatest thing about this whole thing is when you can find your fellow compatriots in that fandom just in the most random settings. It's a great way to meet people, and you have something to talk about right off the bat, because I've never been good at small talk.
Well, absolutely, and that was going to bring me to actually the next sort of series of questions, because you know, we met you at Dragon Con. How long have you been going to Dragon Con?
Off and on. Well, originally I went to a school at Oglethorpe University back in, I think I started there in 2006. And one day, right around that weekend, I wasn't at the actual convention, but I was in Petrie Center and I had no idea what was going on. So I'm like, what is this? Why are all these people carrying lightsabers around? And I think the first time I went was maybe 2009, 2010. And then I skipped a couple of years and I didn't go the full weekends at first. But consistently, I think I've been going since maybe 2013.
Gotcha. And are there parts of Dragon Con that you sort of are there areas, or do you kind of just wander around?
I'm kind of just wandering around. The best moments, like the best panel I've ever been to, isn't like waiting in for 3 hours to see a celebrity, but it was like, and considering what I just said about anime, this may sound odd. It was this panel in the basement of the, I want to say it was the Hyatt. And it was this guy who owned a bunch of art cells from Akira. And so he was showing the movie and then he'd like pause it, show off some of his artwork and talk about how they made it. And that was just fascinating to me.
That is really cool. I think I do remember that person being a guest. I wasn't able to go to that panel, but I do remember, I think he's toured around with that stuff too.
Yeah. It took him 2 hours to go through the first 10 minutes of the movie. So
wow. And there's so much to Dragon Con. It's so huge, but in a great way where there's really something new to discover every year.
Very true.
And like you were saying, it's really, you're just around your people, right? We're just around our people. Like this is, I mean, if you can't strike up a conversation with someone at Dragon Con, I don't know what help there is for you. Like, cause everybody has a fandom there, even if it's not a fandom that you share.
And it's a good way to learn about and introduce yourself to some new things. And hey, maybe that'll turn you into a lifelong fan of something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, very cool. Well, we're about to find out what other geek turn-ons and turn-offs you have because Mike, are you ready?
Me? I'm always ready, man. I basically have the geeksy questions right on tattooed to the back of my arm, so it's good.
I see. Well, that does help. That's a lot of pain. That was a lot of pain that you had to go through for that, so we appreciate it.
Pain, Schmain. It's not as much pain as Daniel's about to go through, so it's okay.
Of course.
So, Daniel, you ready for your first question in the geek seat after Mr. Mike tears you down?
Yep. I'm all set.
He is ready to go.
Oh, wow. That was pretty quick. Mike, you're just going to start off 2018, you know, with the Invisible Slipknot, I think it's called.
Look, 400, he isn't our 401st victim, but he's close.
Oh, exactly. Remember, there were times when the Geek Seat where we had multiple people at the same time.
That's true. We have never done a full count of how many Geek Seat victims have piled up over the years.
Yeah, and there were those Geek Seat episodes that, you know, we just couldn't air on the radio and on podcasts just because, you know, it wasn't safe for broadcast.
It was too devastating.
Exactly. The tears were crying, coming out. The blood was flowing.
Yeah, it got real.
It got real.
Did it ever. All right, kids. Let's get started with Daniel's shot at the Geek Seat. Daniel, your first question is, what was your favorite Geek Out moment?
Talking about Dragon Con, the thing that first comes to mind is when I got to see Terry Gilliam there and made him chuckle with my question at the Q&A. That was a lot of fun. The question was something about how the studio battles that he's famously waged influenced his movies, but I mentioned Sid Sheinberg specifically, who is the studio head that he fought very viciously with, and when I said that name, he chuckled to himself. So that was a lot of fun. But I think my personal favorite Geek Out moment. I've been collecting like DVDs and Blu-rays for a very long time. I probably have far more than I care to admit. But it always makes me excited whenever I find like a one that's gone out of print. And there was this one time when I was in Columbia, South Carolina. I was in a used record store. And I found this out-of-print Mystery Science Theater 3000 box set that had that Godzilla versus Megalon episode that was only in print for like a month before Toho came to Rhino or wherever and said, no, you do not have our permission to make this. So I found it, and I've still got it.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. No, that is pretty cool. What was your most disappointing Geek Out moment, though?
Well, I don't think geekdom is really a thing to get disappointed in, but okay, and another Dragon Con story. Terry Jones was there a couple years ago, and I know recently he was diagnosed with dementia, but even at that time, you could already tell there was something a little off there. Like he couldn't really answer any questions that were being put to him. He would just repeat them, and pretty much the moderator would answer on his behalf. And even just sitting there and going, man, this is really sad. And of course, I didn't know it was happening at the time. But even then, it was like, oh, I hope he's okay. But it turns out that something bigger was going on, and that makes me sad.
Oh, totally understand that. Oh, that must have been tough. Mm-hmm. What geeks you out the most?
Probably just going into a record store or a comic book shop or something and finding something that is very rare or that they that's out of print and finding it for way cheaper than it's supposed to be.
Oh, sure.
No. I would say that's still the thing, and it's probably going to become a lot less frequent as everything goes over to digital, but that's still something that always makes me smile.
That's probably like the total score.
Yep, exactly.
No, I totally understand that. What turns your geek off?
One thing that's really been frustrating with fandoms and geekdoms are these people who think that it needs to be like this barrier that shuts everybody else out. So those people who say, well, I'm a real fan of this thing and you never will be the way I am. It's like, dude, no. This is supposed to be about bringing people together and learning about each other and finding common ground. It's not about you trying to win some imaginary prize. I just hate that attitude.
Oh, sure. No, totally understand that. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
This is interesting. I'd say the Doctor, and more specifically the 11th Doctor, because that's when I really started getting into the show, and I just have a feeling he'd have a lot of interesting things to say, and there'd never be a boring moment.
Yep. Understandable. Totally understandable. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
I'm going to say Bran from Game of Thrones simply because he's the most boring person on that show right now.
But he could see the future, the past, and he's a tree.
Yes, and a raven, and somehow all of those things at once. But he makes it sound so stone cold boring. It's like, really? I'll just wait for the future to happen, sir, if you don't mind. If it means I don't have to speak to you.
We're just waiting for him to become relevant.
Well, he's got a season left, so here's hoping.
Yes. Basically, we have to have all the answers in one season, so I understand that. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Okay. Going back to Doctor Who, just go for it in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine. I think it's good life advice.
Absolutely.
Of course, I can see that.
That's great.
Definitely. That's great advice out there, actually.
Mm-hmm.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
Fictional or like real life? Like if I could, I don't know. I think it'd be cool to like be on Serenity or something as one of the crew there, especially with Kaylee's job. It's been a while since I've seen that show. I think that'd be fun.
You'd be the person trying to keep the ship running, in other words.
Yeah.
Okay. Bartering for parts and just putting things together with shoestring. Hey, it's perfect.
It will be perfect if it all works, because then I'd be proud of my accomplishments.
Of course, totally understand that. What geek occupation would you not like to do, though? Same thing?
I think that those like foot soldiers in fantasy worlds, like being a foot soldier in Game of Thrones or in Lord of the Rings, just would stink, because not only do you have to face all the same problems that medieval soldiers did, you have to fight dragons while doing it.
Yeah, I could see that. And Nazgûls and trolls and orcs and the dead and the frozen. And then you have to face Cersei Lannister. Hey, you know, all that.
And then on top of all that, you're probably going to have to pee in your armor. So
I think that would be the least of my problems there.
I don't know. Armor can rust.
Good point. That could become kind of painful with the chafing.
Exactly.
All right. Before we go too far down.
Some soldier powder.
Exactly. Stinky monkey butt. That's what you need.
Oh, boy.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Okay. Something that I think would be really fun would be to run into like Harrison Ford in a bar somewhere and not like pester him for an autograph and not like ask him a million Star Wars questions. Just buy him a whiskey and see what he does.
He'd probably look at you and go, "Get out of my face, kid."
Well, that would still be a good story. It's like, I bought Harrison Ford a whiskey. What have you done with your life?
You know what? Touche. You got me there. Well, Daniel, congratulations, my friend. You have made it through the geek seat.
Woo!
It doesn't mean you're getting out of the seat, but it means you made it through it. Congratulations, Mr. Mike Gordon. Tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth 40 cents.
I'll treasure this award forever.
You want to thank your manager, your agent.
I want to thank the Academy, my mom, my dad, everybody who believed in me through all the years.
And it all led up to this moment.
Absolutely.
I'm so sorry. I mean, yeah.
I know, right?
That is awesome. Well, like we said, Daniel's not getting out of the geek seat so quickly because he is going to be joining us for our next segment. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be back and we'll talk all about Frank Miller.
Hey, This is Michelle, Iconic Rock Talk Show. Got a lot of news for the last show of the year. Unfortunately, do have to start with a couple of goodbyes. Pat D'Anizio, lead singer and songwriter for The Smithereens, passed away last week at the age of 62. The band will be doing a tribute show with some guest vocalists that include Steve Van Zandt and Patti Smyth and Scandal next month in their home state of New Jersey. Also, Jordan Feldstein, manager of Maroon 5, also Big Boy and Iggy Azalea, and also Jonah Hill's brother, passed away this week at the age of 40 after suffering a massive heart attack. The sad news just doesn't stop for the season. But it is a season of miracles, a holiday miracle. Liam and Noel Gallagher are, quote-unquote, all good again. Liam tweeted last week as Big Bro reached out to him, and he says there'll be no more slagging. However, they're both pretty adamant Oasis won't be reforming. Noel says being a stadium rocker in his 50s would be undignified, and when they asked him about the Guns N' Roses reunion and how successful and unexpected that was, he said, if Axl Rose or Slash or any of those guys were as good as me, they wouldn't effing be in Guns N' Roses. They're not mellowing. Meanwhile, their mom, Peggy, has said she'd like to see her boys play again as Oasis. So, let's see. Will they do it for mom? James Hetfield of Metallica was out and about in his new hometown of Vail, Colorado, spreading holiday cheer by visiting firehouses and giving out Metallica-themed Starbucks cards to firefighters and police officers. The band created these cards with Starbucks to support their All Within My Hands Foundation, which is dedicated to creating sustainable communities by supporting workforce education, the fight against hunger, and other critical local services. The Stray Cats official Twitter account tweeted on December 20th, letting the cat out of the bag on January 2nd. Not sure what that's going to be like. Brian Setzer's got shows scheduled into May of next year, so we'll have to wait and see. Lot of news from the world of musicals. Hamilton just opened in London to, of course, rave reviews. Lin-Manuel Miranda works like he's running out of time. He's announced a year-long project called Hamil Drops, which will release new Hamilton-related content once a month throughout 2018. The first track is an outtake from Hamilton called Ben Franklin's Song, performed by the Decemberists. And you can check it out and all the other stuff to come at hamildrops.com. Gwyneth Paltrow, great actress, not my favorite. I always sit there and wonder what Tony Stark sees in Pepper Potts. But she's one of the co-producers of Head Over Heels, a musical with the songs of the Go-Go's, aiming for Broadway next year. It's described as a rollicking adventure tale set in the Elizabethan period. Wasn't expecting that, but that's a period Gwyneth Paltrow knows about, so it just might work. Summer, the Donna Summer musical, will open on Broadway in April, and it will include more than 20 of her hits. Three different actresses will play her at different points in her life. And over in London, Tina, the musical, will open in March. And Tina herself made a rare public appearance at the cast announcement press conference and, of course, electrified everybody. So very exciting musicals with strong women on both sides of the pond. And also Bon Jovi keyboardist David Bryan is set to premiere his musical about the life of Diana, Princess of Wales, in La Jolla, California, where the Donna Summer musical had its trial run. This show's directed by Christopher Ashley, who just won a Tony for directing Come From Away, which was highly acclaimed on Broadway this past season. Brian and his writing partner Joe DiPietro and Ashley all also worked on the Tony Award-winning musical Memphis that played on Broadway for almost 3 years back in 2009 to 2012. So lots of stuff going on Broadway. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Have a happy new year, and we will catch you next time. Check out the blog at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com.
Hello?
Hey, who's interrupting my intro?
Is this a joke? This is no joke, kid. This is the Earth Station DCU podcast.
No clothes on anybody. Sickening.
We're not that kind of podcast, kid. We talk DC news, comics, movies, and television.
You gotta do better than that.
We review Supergirl, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Arrow every week.
That a fact. How much do I owe you?
You don't owe us anything. The podcast is free.
Oh, I just heard this start in a cab, and it is all I can think about.
We are part of the ESO Network.
This is amazing.
Why, thank you. And join us every week for another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Now, can we get back to the show, please?
Welcome back, and now we are turning our ESO spotlight at the end of 2017 to a very controversial, creative figure, important figure in comics and in pop culture, really. And that is the one, the only Frank Miller. Although if you look him up in Wikipedia, there's a bunch of them. But we're talking about the one related to comics. And of course, Mike and I are here. Daniel is still tied to the geek seat, so he's still with us. And
can you please let me out to get some water?
No.
Okay. So anyway, so we've also got with us, joining us after too long of an absence, is J.R. Mounts. J.R., welcome back to the station.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for giving me the phone number again.
You unblocked me. We keep trying to change it, and he keeps finding out. Like, how does this happen?
Oh, I know.
Well, I know that from our conversations, and heck, from your own indie comic work, that you find Frank Miller a pretty big inspiration, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I for myself, this show couldn't be more exciting to me.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that because, I mean, Frank's, you know, had an interesting career, especially of late. It's a mixed bag, if you will. So I'm very curious to see where the conversation takes us. But as always, I want to start with, and we'll start with you, JR. When was the first time you, you know, experienced or were aware of Frank Miller?
I was right there. It had to be Dark Knight Returns because I wasn't reading Daredevil for the same reason why anybody was reading Daredevil. And, you know, Eric kept hearing that Daredevil was cool again, Daredevil was cool again. And I was more of a Spider-Man guy. And during that time in comics, I was only collecting Spider-Man because I was spending most of my money on music. And then this Dark Knight Return comes out and it's like, you haven't seen Batman this way ever. Because other than the Neil Adams stuff, it was always Exploding Cakes and Super Friends, and Batman's always been able to rise above any kind of cliche or genre. But when Frank touched it, you just opened it up and you realize after the first couple of pages, this is different. And it's because he was writing noir. He both took Batman back to what he was and then made him something he was always meant to be. It just seemed like it fit. And Dark Knight Returns to this day remains my absolute favorite comic book of all time.
I don't think you're
everything for me.
It changed everything, period. I mean, it really did.
Yeah,
it changed the entire industry. And we'll get definitely more into that. Daniel, what about you? When did you first discover Frank?
That's an interesting question because unfortunately I stuff like the Dark Knight Returns and some of his early comics work was a little before my time.
Sure.
I've since read them and they're amazing, but they didn't have quite the same impact on me as I'm sure they had with people who were right there. I think the first time I really heard of him and became familiar with him was when the Sin City movie came out. Gotcha. Because I remember when his name was just stamped all over the credits and they were really hyping up that he was a big deal, that he was being involved with this. So I'm like, well, who is he? And so I started looking it up and I read some of the Sin City comics and I at the time a lot of people were still speculating on what the next Batman movie would be and everybody was saying, oh well, it's really being drawn from year one, and I'm like, well, that's another thing Frank Miller wrote. What is that? So it just sort of built from there.
Yes. Even I have had to go back and look at a lot of his early works. I'm like, much like JR, I started with Dark Knight Returns, but very quickly it was clear that I needed to go back and reread some of the stuff that he'd worked on prior to that. Mike, what about you? Because you've been, I mean, I don't know, were you running the store at the time when like this hit?
No, this was way before even I had my store. So This was still when I was in high school. And Frank was, you know, was Daredevil was the first thing that I had ever seen him do. Mm. And it was like just him and Klaus Janson doing the inking on him. And it was just amazing to see the work that Frank was coming. It was like nothing you ever saw before. And when they did the whole Death of Elektra thing, the thing with the hand, he made Daredevil interesting again. He wasn't just a blind Batman, basically. And that's what he was before. And, you know, he had the sidekick with the Black Widow, and he, you know, it was all that before that. But then when he took Daredevil into a completely different direction with art-wise, with story-wise, this was more of the era of the avant-garde artists starting to come out. You had, you know, Frank Miller, you had Sienkiewicz doing his thing on Moon Knight at the time. And it was just amazing to see, because at the time my favorite artists were John Byrne, George Perez, you know, Neil Adams, that type of stuff, you know, the super crisp clean. This was dirty, this was gritty, this was, you know, just like nothing ever I had seen before. And then him going into doing Ronin actually was the second thing I had seen him do, and which was just blew my mind and just took it to a completely different level. And then the word got out that he was doing a Batman series. It was just like, oh, got to check this out. And then it just went from there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously anybody can go, you know, check out his bio, but I mean, it wasn't, I think it's safe to say that even though he had done some credits for Marvel and DC prior to Daredevil, it wasn't until his 1979 gig on Daredevil where he really made a name for himself. And that was one where it's just another instance. This happens a lot, especially with Marvel, where the title's dying. They don't know what to do with it. They give it to some young talent and boom, they just run wild with it, and it becomes like a big thing. And I think I'm not as huge. I mean, I've read quite a bit of Daredevil, but to be honest, I'm not as familiar with the pre Miller work on Daredevil. But I do know that once, you know, I've read the Visionaries series of the collection of his work on Daredevil. And I have to say that the one thing that he brings to the forefront, and it's a very, like, you know, if people love the show now, it's because of what Frank did, because Frank brought Frank tapped into, as you said, JR, crime noir. I mean, it's a dirty crime book. And the, you know, the hero just happens to have, you know, superpowers. Although, you know, he did a lot with the blindness and, but he, you know, I don't know how much all those elements were there before in terms of his martial arts and stick and the hand and
nope,
all that.
That's Frank Miller, buddy.
Right. But but he really brought that to light. And of course he created Elektra, right?
Yep.
Yep.
So, and was Bullseye his, or Bullseye was before?
Bullseye was before, but he was Bullseye a nothing was character. He was a
but
joke.
He made
of
it his own.
Oh God. Yeah. He made him such a dangerous villain. It was just amazing. Bullseye.
And Kingpin was I knew Kingpin as a Spidey villain. I mean, like JR, I was a big Spider-Man fan. I was like my two heroes growing up, my two favorite books that I always got was Spider-Man and Batman. Period. Boom. Done. That was that's all I really, you know, I dipped into some other books here and there, but those were my two main books that I read. And, you know, Frank, you know, didn't touch Spider-Man much, But boy, I mean, we'll talk about it in a bit. Did he really change Batman a lot? And not really change, but really made an impact with that character. But you can see in the Daredevil run now, you know, hindsight, you can see like that just building and building. Like what Frank would become known for is right there in his work in Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because of Frank.
Kingpin, such a great character.
Oh, exactly. Kingpin was such a Spider-Man villain before that.
That's all I knew him for. Exactly. Like, whoa, this is a different Kingpin than the one I'm used to. Like the one I'm used to is like, you know, like going toe to toe with Spider-Man and kind of working. But, the one with Frank's Kingpin is a true crime lord.
Yes. And it was interesting because Spider-Man and Daredevil always ran in the same crowd, to say. And it was only a matter of time, and it was surprising that a lot of crossover between the two villains, between them and such, like Doc Ock, and it was only natural, especially because Daredevil was based out of Hell's Kitchen, that Kingpin would pop up eventually. And what Frank did with Kingpin is what you see now on the TV show.
He
fleshed out Kingpin, made him, I hate to say it, a real person, per se. And a true crime lord.
I'd even say that, like, you know, the Punisher could even be attributed to a lot of some of the Frank stuff, because he brought the Punisher into the Daredevil world too when he started writing Daredevil. And so the whole crime noir angle with the Kingpin and Stick and the Hand just had Punisher fit in there perfectly. And he's not responsible for Punisher, but I mean, I definitely see why in Netflix having to use Frank's formula for Daredevil, why the Punisher works so well in that world as well.
Well, exactly. But if you remember also in that era of Daredevil, he actually brought even Wolverine into the series for a bit.
Oh, yeah, and the Hulk.
Exactly. Yeah. But Wolverine was because of the Japan side to it. The whole thing with the hand.
Was Claremont.
That's one thing I definitely.
Ronin.
Yes. Yeah. That was right before Ronin, right. Like towards his end of his run. In 1983, he finished his Daredevil run, and then in 1982, he and Claremont produced that Wolverine miniseries, which changed that character. I mean, Wolverine was cool before that, but man, after that miniseries, he became like the Wolverine that I think we all look at now.
He was the X-Men on Batman, basically.
Well, if you want to go switch over to the Batman side of it, too, if you think about it, Dark Knight actually came out before Crisis did. And basically, he was the first one who pitted Batman against Superman, that they weren't friends anymore. Mm-hmm. It was basically before that, before Crisis, it was Batman and Superman were the world's finest. You never saw them go up against together. They were had each other's backs and everything like that. And then Frank came up with Dark Knight, and that he basically showed, hey, that Superman was the big, you know, Boy Scout and the on side of the government, and Bruce was the underground operative, basically.
Well, plus it shows, and this is always the scene I bring up whenever anybody would talk about Batman versus Superman. Oh, well, Superman, he's obviously going to destroy Batman. It's more about, in that case, about a battle of ideals. Like you were saying, Superman's the ultimate Boy Scout who will be the good guy and use those tactics no matter what, even if those good guys are no longer necessarily doing decent things. So it was more about – he was the one that really showed, to me at least, the ideological difference between the two and how those differences really would create a great conflict between those characters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Agreed. Well, let's get knee deep into it. I mean, the bomb that's dropped in 1986, that is Batman: The Dark Knight Returns. You know, from as a reader of Batman, I was, to say the least, I was amazed at this. It was like, what? Like, you know, the title threw me because I was like, wait a minute, Returns, like he hasn't been away. Like, I was just like, what is going on?
Yeah, where did you go?
And this was before. This is really before like a miniseries. I mean, there were miniseries. This was not the first ever miniseries, but they weren't that common. And certainly prestige ones weren't that common. So So this was something that was like right out of the gate, DC knew they had something special here, and something quite risky, because it was an older Batman. It was a Batman that was broken. It was a, you know, there was a, it didn't really pay attention to much continuity. And for, in terms of, you know, all this stuff about, you know, Robin and where's Robin and who's this and who's that, like it just was all murky. Mm-hmm. It was this futuristic tale, but it didn't have, I mean, they didn't have the word Elseworlds then. So you just didn't know what this was.
Right.
And, you know, obviously an age where heroes, most of the other heroes were gone. And yes, a very, you know, very stringent, straight-laced Superman here that, you know, once this was released and became popular, you could almost say as much as it enhanced Batman, it almost hurt Superman. In terms of perception,
deconstructed Superman.
Absolutely, but in a way that didn't help that character. I think that character still kind of. I think Superman still kind of suffers from what Frank did and how popular that idea was.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a classic line where Batman calls Superman a joke, and that you know, everything he stands for, you know, is a joke, and that he wants him to remember like the man who beats him, and that's when he pretty much lays to waste with the guy he just kicks his ass. But just like what Daniel said, it, you saw the differences black and white right there. Suddenly Batman was cool and Superman wasn't for all of his powers.
I must admit, I did not. This was 86. It was the year I was graduating high school. It was the year I was going into college. It was a really crazy year for me. So I did not get these as they hit the shelves. But it was very quickly collected the next year. And I grabbed that. And boy, yeah. Reading that in one big chunk like that, that was, I think, the first experience I had reading a trade, really. And
was that the first trade that had ever existed? Because my understanding was that was really what introduced the trade paperback market, was when they collected Dark Knight Returns and then Watchmen the next year.
Yeah, I don't know if
it
I want to call
popular.
Yeah, it was this trade collected was like available in bookstores, and that's what really put it over. Because now you had just regular people going in and saying, oh, there's a book Batman, like, oh, it's a, you know, like, oh, let's read this. Like, it wasn't a thing that people did. You didn't see Batman like books in the bookstores.
Right.
You just didn't. So, and it was for an adult audience. Really, it was not for kids. So that caused its own little controversy, because the 80s were all about, you know, what's good for kids and what's not, in terms of music and books and TV and movies and stuff. So that, you know, it kind of had a reputation for being a little naughty. So, of course, kids wanted it even more. Between that, obviously, that year with Dark Knight coming out in book form as well as Watchmen, it really changed the trade. Mm-hmm. Like, it changed the business in a way that now people expected their books to be collected in a way that hadn't been done before. Before, you had to search for back issues.
As for the adult angle, remember, too, that was around the same time frame that within a year's time, you'd also get Killing Joke and Batman Year One. So suddenly, yeah, comics weren't for kids at all in the next couple of years. And everybody wanted to write an adult comic book in this respect. It changed everything.
Yeah. So let me just ask you personally about Dark Knight. I think it's such an important piece of work that we could do a podcast just on it, but I don't want to do that. But I'm just like, personally, what is it about Dark Knight that really resonates with you? Daniel, we'll start with you. Besides the, you know, Superman stuff.
I think the thing that I really enjoyed the most about the Dark Knight Returns was Carrie Kelly, to be honest. That's still a very underrated Robin to me, simply because it was showing the impact that a figure like Batman would actually have on young, downtrodden people. Here was somebody from a broken home. I don't think they ever showed her parents. They were just always talking off panel, and smoking pot constantly, and she was still hearing about the exploits and was inspired to go and try and be a hero herself. I always thought that that was a very interesting take on Robin, and I wish that they would bring her back for some more things.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah.
Don't give DC any ideas. You know, they probably
well,
listen.
And, well, I mean, there's been a lot of talk. I mean, I think of introducing Carrie, and I think she had was New 52. Did they try that? I don't know. I think at some point they did, but obviously she was the fact that you know the fact that Miller chose to make the sidekick a young girl was a pretty big mm-hmm. deal.
And he's also like one of the guys that like with Whedon, he just comes up with great strong female characters from Elektra to Carrie Kelly to Martha Washington, Goldie and Miho.
I think it's something that he doesn't give enough credit for. Everybody assumes, especially after Sin City, that he only writes for prostitutes and those sorts of characters, which is becoming more and more true. But if you look back at all the books that he's written quite a few strong female characters.
Yeah, absolutely. JR, what about you? What is it about Dark Knight Returns that just is like, I read it every year again, just because
yeah, me too.
I get something more out of it. But what resonates with you with that story?
This story is the thing that I can pick up every single version, edition, re-release, compendium ever made. I've got every version. If they make it, I'll get it.
Have they done an absolute? They must have done an absolute, right?
They did an absolute years ago. But what I really loved is they did a gallery edition where they take the actual scans of the black and white artwork, and you can see the work without any of Lynn Varley's colors. Her colors are fantastic, quite honestly. It's just this pale watercolor. But when you look at the strength of the pencil work and the inking that he did in himself outside of Klaus Janson, it's just really strong. But quite honestly, the reason that I go back to it is not just for the art. The art's fantastic because Miller had a great way to make his work just like a tapestry. He's like the Michelangelo of this Batman story, you know. And he's as much of a godfather of noir comics as Raymond Chandler is to noir. But he made Batman seem like Dirty Harry cool. You know, the words that would come yes. off of this script would just had a rhythm to it, you know?
And there is a
holy crap.
Yeah, exactly. You can imagine Clint Eastwood, especially the Dirty Harry Clint Eastwood at the time of the 80s, you know, which would go ahead, make my day kind of guy, right?
You know, just the way he marries that with his image, it's a perfect work of art as far as comics goes. Even just if you forget about the legacy, you know, I know something like this, you create something like this, I'd pretty much be done. I would never want to do anything else after that because I can't. Everything else pales in comparison. I'm just done. But I'd be okay because I did the Dark Knight Returns. It's kind of like walking on the moon. What do you do? Well, I walk on the moon. That's all I have to say. But Miller has a great meter to his words, and no matter what the story is, even though it's dated for the 80s, you can keep going back to it and just find things to build off of it. And he just mentioned things like when he gets hit in the bat symbol on his chest, you know, the fabric peels away and there's this metal plate, and no one had ever thought of that before. And he says, well, why do you think it's there? It's a target.
Yeah. You know,
to draw the bullet away from his head. So it's little things like this, little tropes that Miller was able to work out in the script. I just think that as beautiful as it looks, it's written very cool and smart. And I think it would pave the way to everything else. And quite honestly, because of Dark Knight Returns, I would get anything Frank Miller. Good and bad, but Dark Knight Returns made me want to get everything. This is why I got Ronan, why I got Wolverine, all those things.
Yeah. Mike, what about you?
Poof, that's tough because, you know, I bought the original in the separate issues when they first came out. You know, seeing the poster at the comic shop with the silhouetted Batman with the lightning behind him. It was just amazing to think about, like, oh, Frank is doing Batman. This is going to be interesting. But it's an older Batman. It wasn't what we thought it was going to be. You know, right in the first issue, Batman kills the Joker. And it was just like, it was like nothing you've ever seen. It was like you guys have been saying, it was his work matured with, you know, it had been maturing through Daredevil, then into Ronin, and now into Dark Knight. It was just like, it was like seamless. It almost like flowed page per page. The scene of Bruce when he first shows up as Batman, you know, he's not the muscular skinny Batman that we're used to seeing in the comics. This is a larger, heavier, solid, almost like a sumo wrestler size Batman.
Huge.
Yeah. And it worked. That's the thing. It was just amazing to see how it worked together. And
yeah, it really is an instance where Frank is really going out there. Like, this is not traditional comic work.
Mm-mm. Exactly. And it made fun of society. It was making fun of Reagan at the time. And it was the whole everything that Frank did in the series was just a play on society, what was happening in the 80s, the punk rockers and the, you know, the way the government was being run. It was just amazing to see it, you know, and it would be like, now we're just laughing at, oh, that's so funny and everything. But it was a great take on society at the time.
Well, and at the, you know, now it's been so overdone, right? Because of what, but this is the first time that this the story had been told in this manner, in terms of, you know, all the balloons with the television reporters, basically telling the exposition for you, you know, keeping you informed of what was going on, and then letting the main characters, Bruce and Carrie, and to the extent Joker's part in it and all this, like, just really just do their thing, while this sort of like dancing like background of exposition happened and set the tone, and got such great character moments. I mean, I don't think I've ever, at least at that time, and I was a big comic fan, but I don't think I'd ever, you know, in a movie, like the perfect example is like Rocky, right? So in Rocky, you can really like, you know, feel the punches when you're watching it. It's just the way that Altman directs the movie, you know, your blood starts to boil during the fight, and it's just experience that you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm getting this excited, you know, the hairs on the back of your head stand up, and you're just, you know, you there's a tingle, there's, you're excited, your blood's pumping. This, like that scene where Batman fights off the mutant guy, and you know, and he declares he's a surgeon, you know, you're just like, oh, I mean, that was really cinematic in a way that I had never experienced comics before. And it's like I said, that the stuff with the TV reporter, like that's been used so much since then, so that now we just kind of look at it and go, okay, well, that's what they're doing there. They're just, you know, it's gotten to the point now where it almost, yeah, it seems like, oh, it's not even effective as much as it was then. But back then, and you're right, the 80s, it reflected the 80s, not only Reagan and Letterman and everything, like you said, the punk movement and all this kind of stuff that was part of the 80s. This is where Frank projected all this was going to be. And he wasn't saying, isn't this cool? He was saying, there's something wrong with all of us.
Mm-hmm. Like, exactly.
Me no, included. Absolutely. He was, you know, Frank was saying, me too. Like, I'm not judging you. I'm just saying, because I dig this stuff too, but man, there's something really wrong with all of us.
Let's keep on moving, because we only got like 20 minutes left of the topic.
Right, right. Well, yes, as I said, we could get caught in Dark Knight, and certainly we could. So after Dark Knight, so then, yes, he returns. He does, you know, Born Again, Daredevil, which is a great series. Also does, as mentioned before, Batman Year One, which is amazing. But I want to really focus now on, then he goes, in the 90s, he goes indie. He goes completely indie.
Yeah.
Like he take like Marvel and DC are fighting back over him, back and forth in the 80s. The 90s happen, and Frank says, you know what? I'm doing my own thing. So he goes over, he works out a deal with Dark Horse Comics. This is around the time, you know, I think also, well, shortly after that, the Image stuff happens. So there's this, because Frank's not getting, you know, all he deserves out of all that, that he feels. So right. He's going to do his own work. So he goes and works at Dark Horse, does things like Hard Boiled, Give Me Liberty. And then, of course, starts with Sin City. That starts up and with Big Guy, Rusty Robot. I think Martha Washington is around this time. What do you guys, what stands out for you guys? And we'll start with you, JR. What stands out for you guys in the indie Dark Horse years?
I think the thing that stands out overall, there's things I liked out of all of it, but I think what I really took from his entire 90s run was that you could create something new at any time if it's good enough. You know, he came out of the gate with, you know, as a writer, he was using guys like Jeff Darrow and John Romita Jr. and Sykovich and Simonson on the RoboCop versus Terminator. And he was just saying, look, I'm going to create great stories. I just need a place that allows me to tell the stories as I see fit. That's why Dark Horse was so awesome for it, because it was all this independent work and his writing was just off the charts. And, you know, you could see why he was able to do Sin City. You could see why he was able to do 300. Because they weren't like Dark Knight Returns, yet they were things that were so inherently cool, but also so inherently Frank Miller. I didn't understand Ronin when it first came out. I didn't get it. You know, this whole sci-fi samurai thing. I thought it was awesome. It looked great. And it read pretty cool. But Dark Knight Returns was really where I really hit it. This indie stuff is where the Ronin stuff really fits. And he was also a really big proponent for creators' rights. He was really reaming Marvel at the time for doing Jack Kirby wrong. So he made a lot of enemies during that time. He had a really big mouth. But he was also putting out Hard Boiled, RoboCop, Sin City, going back to do some Daredevils, doing the whole Batman Spawn crossover, you know. He just had the Midas touch all throughout that era. Mm-hmm. And I think that what I got from it was, you know, when he ended that era with 300, one of the most quotable comics around, the guy just, he was a real proponent for, let's create new stuff. Let's get people excited about always trying to create new stuff. And I think that's what I took from it as an artist, which is why I do original work.
Well, it's kind of interesting because it was Frank and Dave Sim at the time who helped start up the Artist Fund for a lot of the older artists and such. And, you know,
between that and the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which he was a big part of as well.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, he made it possible for a lot of indie people, even mainstream artists to be protected in ways that they hadn't been before.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And he chastised people for not giving artists and writers their due.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because he saw it firsthand. I mean, he had a huge success with both companies. And at the end of the day, you know, they're not his creations. So, so, you know, at the end of the day, they're just like, okay, if you're not going to work on it, Frank, that's fine. We'll just go with who's next.
And they did.
And they did. Yes, they did.
And, hey, thanks for making us great comics. We'll take it from here.
Yeah, right. Daniel, anything in this era that you want to speak to?
Sure. I mentioned Sin City being the thing that really brought me into Frank Miller's work originally, but that was only because of the movie adaptation. I think the most interesting thing that Frank Miller was doing as a writer at the time was the comics he was doing about Martha Washington, like Give Me Liberty, because we were talking about the satirical element to like the Dark Knight Returns and how Miller was trying to reflect society back on itself. And that's all present there. I mean, it's actually quite a bit more relevant now, I would argue, than it was back then. It, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's pretty much Judge Dredd, except Judge Dredd's been replaced by a young black girl named Martha Washington. And it's a fantastic book. But I think the other thing about it is, even at the time, I think Frank Miller already had a Frank Miller motif that he'd created. Everything was very steeped in film noir talk. All the characters were tough as nails. Whenever you think of Frank Miller, that had already been established. And this is sort of going away from that establishment to a certain degree. I mean, the characters are very vulnerable, and they're not necessarily going to win just based on their strength alone. It was very interesting, and I really think it's his most underrated thing that he's ever done.
Yeah, good point, because even though it's easy to see that the guy who created Dark Knight Returns created the Sin City series, it's very different when you look at the Martha Washington stuff, and even even more so the Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot stuff. I mean, it's just like, whoa, like this is the same guy. But it's like JR was saying, he really wanted to do a lot of different things. And so he was able to stretch himself in ways that, you know, obviously the big two companies would not have really let him do, probably.
And it was good, I think, that he managed to do that and show that he wasn't just a one-trick pony. He actually did have some range, and he was finally able to use it and show it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mike, anything about the 90s for you?
Oh, tons, because that was the time I did have my shop.
Yeah. Right. Now, and was did you find, let me ask you this, did you find that people, no matter what, if Frank was part of it, that's what the draw was, or did it depend on the project?
It depended on the project, because something like Hard Boiled barely moved off the shelves for us, where, you know, once you started getting into some of like the Martha Washington stuff, the stuff with the Sin City, it started growing more and more in popularity and such, because what he was doing with Sin City was just amazing, with the dark tones and the blacks and the whites and then the yellow, you know, just the monotone. It was just amazing. That for me captured the true noir feel to it, and it was just amazing to see. And then to end the 90s with 300 was just like, wow.
300 blew me away.
Yeah.
Like I enjoyed a lot of the stuff from the 90s, but when I opened up 300, you know, between Frank, I think that was, for me, it was like the peak art of Frank, along with the Varley, and, you know, and just the story was great. It was something that you didn't really see a lot of before. The whole Spartans thing wasn't really a thing before then. I mean, yeah, we kind of knew about it, but not to that level. And it just was such a beautiful story of a very violent, very violent story. In a way that only Frank could give it to us. That's one of like my favorite of his work. Even though I appreciate what he's done in other characters, man, 300 is a book that, like you were saying, JR, if I had done 300, if that was the only thing that I had done, I'd be like, yeah, my life's worth it.
Done.
All right. So
I wrote Let It Be. I'm done.
We end the 90s, and then we get into the 2000s. So the last 20 years or so, we'll say the last 17, haven't been great for Frank. His work has not been, he's not been very prolific. He's come out with a movie. He gave us all his adaptation of The Spirit, and he came out with the sequel, The Dark Knight Strikes Again. Both of those were, to say that they were terrible, not well received, it's an understatement.
Terrible.
They were very, yeah, I want to try to, and I was thinking about this too. I'm like, wow, when we talk about the last 17 years, man, I hate to like crap on Frank, but man, like he doesn't make it easy, does he?
No,
well, especially after All-Star Batman and Robin, where he practically became a meme of himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny because I felt with The Dark Knight Strikes Again, I was like, God, this was the first time I actually really felt like somebody was trying to milk the teat. It was just like trying to go, trying to capture what he had before and failed miserably.
I read two issues of Dark Knight Strikes Again. And I went to the comic shop, and the owner of the comic shop, which I still go to this day, Galactic Quest, the owner, Kyle, asked me, so what do you think of what Frank's doing? And I said, you know, I think Frank's gotten to that point now where he's the comic equivalent of Bob Dylan. Like, he can write the songs, but he shouldn't sing the song. And as much, and like, maybe he should stick to writing and let other people like draw, because I did think that the, you know, whereas they're, I can't say that they're horrible drawings, but they're just not moving me the way that they used to. I just this past weekend, because I've had it on my shelf forever, for like the last few years, but I just picked up Holy Terror and read it this weekend. And my
that's the worst.
It's a mess.
You can't get worse than Holy Terror.
I will say that this past year with Dark Knight 3, The Master Race, with a lot of help from Brian Azzarello, as well as Andy Kubert and Klaus is back, is hopeful. There's some really good stuff there. I did enjoy that. I thought it was a worthy addition to my collection. I thought the story was pretty good. The characters were good. I thought there's a lot of good stuff there, and you could tell of his love for the Silver Age in that. So if anybody hasn't checked that out, I would recommend it. Because yes, it's not Holy Terror. It's not.
I think there's even worse Frank Miller comic out there than Holy Terror, and that's Frank Miller's RoboCop, which kind of the whole thing about that was he had written the scripts to RoboCop 2 and 3 originally, but then he would complain years afterward about how the studio utterly ruined his vision. So I was always interested in hearing that, going, oh, they got this guy to write RoboCop? Well, that's pretty cool. Why didn't they just let his script stand? And if you read the comics that were based on his original script, you'll see why, because his ideas were terrible. Like, the main villain, Kane, isn't in them at all, and which means it's just really weird and shapeless. He didn't really know what he was doing with RoboCop as the character. If you can find it, read it once. Exactly. It should have been, but it's just so muddled and confused. I'd almost recommend reading it just so you can see sometimes studio interference is a good thing.
I would say, in my mind, the best thing that Frank Miller was part of in the last, let's say the 2000s, was, and I mentioned it earlier this year when we talked and celebrated the 100th year of Will Eisner, is that Dark Horse put out a book, a conversation between the two of them, Miller Eisner, which is I think should be required. If I was starting a college of comic book studies, this would be required reading. It's a great book between two hugely talented and creative folks. Have you read that, JR?
I finished that this year. I've read it twice. And what I love about it is it made me appreciate Eisner, but because it's really just a bunch of transcribed conversations, it comes off as natural rather than soapboxing. You know, it's just two guys talking about the craft. They disagree a lot.
A lot.
Miller hates the comic book industry, hates the format, always trying to redo it. And yet he's talking to the guy who did redo it. He created, created the graphic novel. So to see these two heavy hitters just talk like they're buddies, it was fascinating, and just it really warmed my heart, because looking at a younger generation and an older generation appreciating each other. And to me, it made Eisner much cooler than I'd ever thought he was.
Definitely good reading. So Speaking of good reading, so it's now we'll come to the end of our look at Miller by asking you to pick one project that Miller has done that you recommend everybody check out. We'll start with you, JR.
Okay. Frank Miller. That's it. Everything.
Do you still get all his stuff? Like if he comes out with a book tomorrow, are you picking it up?
Yes, because of this. Now I don't love everything he does. There's a lot of stuff that I hate, but even in the stuff I hate, he'll come up with something that is awesome. Like Dark Knight Return, Dark Knight Strikes Again, The Flash powering an entire city. Fantastic idea. You know, Dark Knight Master Race, the whole the little bitty city.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Going nuts. All of these little ideas, even in the worst comics that he does, sometimes there's always some nugget. You're like, well, that's Frank. That's the good Frank. So literally, obviously for me, the pinnacle is always Dark Knight Returns, always. But because of Dark Knight Returns, I appreciate everything else he does because of that.
Fair enough. Daniel, what about you? Any recommended reads?
Sure. I don't want to be cliched and say The Dark Knight Returns because most everybody's familiar with that. So I'm going to go with
absolutely.
I'm going to go with Daredevil, The Man Without Fear.
Oh, so good.
So good.
John Romita Jr.'s art. Oh, perfect.
That was the character that he really cut his teeth on originally. So it was great seeing him essentially rewriting the origin of that character. And to me, that's the one that's always stuck in my mind. And I think to everybody else too. So I'm not sure there was a trade hardcover in print a while ago. I'm not sure if it still is, but if you can find it, definitely go read that one.
Yeah. Good pick. Mike, what about you?
Probably I'm going to have to think, not to be cliche or anything. It's either going to have to be Sin City or 300. I think those are both groundbreaking. And it was neat to actually watch the movie 300 and actually seeing Frank Miller's comic come alive.
Yeah, that's where Zach really just used his book as a storyboard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what about Sin City? Do you have a particular good story that's your favorite? Dame to Kill For. Yeah, that's my man. Mm-hmm. That's my man.
Yellow bastard.
I definitely recommend checking out a lot of the early stuff, since we're, now it's so almost cool to like bash Frank because of his output in the last 17 years. Go back and look at his early stuff. Look at those Daredevil Visionaries. There's three. They got them collected in three parts. They might even have it in an omnibus now. But you will change your tune because I'm just about to start reading Daredevil Born Again. I have not read it yet, so I just finished the Visionaries this year, and now I'm going into Born Again. So I'm looking forward to that. And Batman Year One, check that out too, because that's brilliant. A lot of what you love about Batman came from that book as well. So very cool. Well, thank you all for joining us, and be right back with Angela's Geek Girls Take.
I've been coming up with one ton of words to describe what a jive it was when we met the first time. Running out all my line,
trying to find me. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the Doctor Who Christmas special, Twice Upon a Time. So, my tradition every year is to watch the Doctor Who Christmas special. I have my tissues ready because it also basically makes me cry every time, and I spend the next hour and a half watching one of my favorite parts about Doctor Who, the Christmas special. Yes, I said that right. The Doctor Who Christmas specials are some of my favorite episodes. Yeah, I have random episodes that I really, really love and could go on about forever, but the Christmas specials just hold a special place in my heart for some reason. So I will say this, was not my favorite Christmas special. It dragged on for me at times. I did enjoy the story, but I felt that for Capaldi's leaving episode, it didn't have the Capaldi feel to it. I like that he got to see Bill again one more time, even if he was skeptical of her for most of the episode, but that kind of is just the way the 12th Doctor is. I also loved the First Doctor in it, and the nod to the Brigadier with his father being the main human in the episode. That part really got me when they finally said who the guy was. I liked Capaldi's speech at the end. It was very, very sweet, and the message of be kind could go in so many ways. All the way to the new doctor coming in, and how some people are not taking it very well that there's going to be a female doctor. Also, Capaldi's doctor always had the message of kindness throughout his entire run, even if he did come off as a rickety old man for so much of it, and that's one of the reasons that I loved the 12th Doctor so much as a character. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. And we barely scratched the surface about Frank Miller. That we could do a whole series about him alone.
We barely scratched the surface of Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, good point. You were a little bit too much into that, Mr. Mike. But it was a lot of fun.
It is the crowning achievement, right?
Oh, it was. You know, whenever people think of Frank Miller, Dark Knight is one of the first things they come to tongue. It's actually pretty cool.
Absolutely.
But it was actually awesome watching, like, when Daredevil was out this last couple years and literally seeing scenes which were literally taken from his comic.
Yeah, don't tell Frank, mm-hmm. though. You just get all riled up again.
I know. So let's, before we start getting into more Frank Miller talk, let's thank our guests for being here. Daniel, you made it through your first episode with us.
Woohoo!
Congratulations.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Oh, dude, you're always welcome back on the show anytime you'd like. And anything you want to shout out about?
Sure. Check out the main podcast that I do with Nick Hoffman. He's the host. I'm just the frequent guest that annoys him. Myopia Defend Your Childhood. We also have a couple spinoffs, including a mission briefing where we watch all the James Bond films. And I am a writer for popdose.com, so check me out there, too.
That is awesome. Thank you so, so much. And you're not really getting away. You're still stuck in the geek seat for quite some time, so don't worry.
Exactly. All right.
JR still has the marks from many years ago.
I do.
Exactly. He wears them as a badge of honor, though.
I still love you guys.
JR, thank you, sir.
No, thank you, guys. This has been a true honor to talk about one of my biggest heroes.
Oh, it was awesome having you on. When I told you we were doing Frank Miller, you were like, I'm there. Just tell me how to get on the show. I'll be there.
I just knew there was no way I was going to fit in all of the things we could say.
I know. It's like, you know, it's pretty awesome. And, you know, what do you got going on with Mr. Pickle? That's
actually
such a loaded question.
I'm letting Pickle rest for a year.
Are you?
I'm working on a, I've been working on this idea I've had in my head for a couple of years called Silver Lining. It's basically like E.T. for old people, you know, about an old man who comes across an alien that crashes into his barn. It's part of an evil race. And so, He and this old man try to save Dubuque and each other.
Oh, wow.
So I'm writing music for it. I'm doing watercolors for it. It's my first all color book. And right now, I know every artist says this, but I think it's going to, right now, it's my best work. I'm having so much fun doing this. It's just a one shot. You know, I'm going right back to the pickle when this is done, but this is what I'm going to be putting out in 2018. And I'm going to do a Kickstarter for it sometime in January-ish.
That is awesome. If you want to come on the show to promote your Kickstarter, we'd be glad to have you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, dude. I'm an equal opportunity megalomaniac.
We know.
I know.
Do you have any cons, or are you going to take some time off from doing cons to work on your project?
Because of that, I am actually specifically taking off everything until March. I've only got one show in January, one show in February. Last year, last couple of years, I was doing, you know, all weekends, every weekend that I could. So in order to get this book done, because it's so important to me, I'm taking January and February off.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you'll see me hitting the road again in March on the What You Again tour.
The Oh, There's JR Again show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. Well, that's awesome, man. It's so good to have you back, though, dude.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, guys. I love you guys.
And Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure, sir.
What do you got for us this week?
Well, this past week I was on a podcast that's near and dear to my heart. It is, and it's celebrating its 175th episode. And guess what? I have been on all 175. My God, it's crazy. Well, actually, probably give or take a few, right? But Earth Station Who, we just reviewed the Christmas show, which was a great fun episode to review. Of course, Mike, you were there, and Mary Ogle, our co-host, as well as returning for just this one time to join us was former host Jennifer Hartshorn. And it was great having us all together and reminiscing about Doctor Who, about this past year, as well as this new episode that we had fun discussing. And, you know, people ask me like, man, how can you do like all these podcasts? Like you, I was on, you know, this is the third year in a row that I've been on more than 100 episodes of podcasts in a year. And the reason that I like doing it so much is because I love talking to all you guys, and the Earth Station Who crew is a favorite time of mine. So I look forward to next year and talking about classic Who and classic, current, and beyond is what I think our is that our catchphrase? It is, isn't it? So it's a great time.
Sounds
and,
good.
And thank you, Mike, for being a co-host of that one as well, and just having fun, man.
Oh, it's always fun talking about geeky stuff, and it's just a great time to be able to do it. And it just was awesome that we were able to time episode 175 with the Christmas special this time out.
And yeah, absolutely.
It worked. It was fun to talk about it. It was fun to have Jen back on the show. But you know, me, you, and Mary just have a great time, and we're not stopping because Doctor Who is going on hiatus until the fall. We are still going to be coming to you every 2 weeks.
And a lot of old Doctor Who, classic Doctor Who, not old, right? Classic Doctor Who we got to catch up on.
So. Exactly. There's still episodes that Mike has not seen yet. So this is actually pretty cool.
A lot of them. So probably another 175.
Exactly. So at least. So it should be a lot of fun to do. And, you know, check us out on, you know, on your iTunes, Stitcher Radio, you know, wherever fine podcasts are found. And if you have friends who like Doctor Who, please point them our way. We love talking all about new and old series. So it's pretty cool. All right. My shout out is a mini movie review. I went to the movies twice in the last week, and we actually saw The Shape of Water, and it was amazing. It was just, it was a true fairy tale. It was
so good.
It was wonderful to go see. And if this does not win some awards, I'll be really shocked. And it was, I don't want to ruin anything about it because it's still fairly new. It's not actually, I don't think it's in limited release. I think it's full release now, but it is definitely worth going to go see. If you're tired of seeing Jedis, it's great to see a Fishman instead. It was pretty awesome. And then we also went to see Darkest Hour with, you know, basically the movie about World War II or the beginnings of World War II. And it was just amazing. And seeing, you know, Winston Churchill becoming prime minister and the story behind it, all the politics, it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, Gary Oldman just knocked it out of the ballpark as Winston Churchill. I had to keep on pinching myself and looking at him and going, that's Commissioner Gordon, you know. So, or Sirius Black, it was just, or Sid Vicious, it was just like awesome to see. He buries himself in his roles, and he did a bang up job on this and everything. The only thing I thought was missing from it was a Dalek, so it was perfect, you know.
Right.
But that's later in the war, so, you know, it could still happen. So, but it was a lot of fun, and highly recommend both movies. And these are two definite Oscar nominees that, you know, I'll be shocked if one of those don't get Best Picture. So, you know, I definitely would love to, you know, recommend these highly. And, you know, we don't usually do just mini movie reviews, but Mike has done some, I've done some. So it's kind of cool. And that's my shout out. And speaking of shouting out, I want to shout out to all you guys. Happy holidays from all of us here on the podcast. This is going to be our last show of 2017. I know a couple people there got their hopes up when I started with that part. But now we're going to be coming back fully in 2018, but we are ready to, you know, jump for joy for 2018. But before we do that, we have to do a look back at 2017. So our next episode, we are putting 2017 in the geek seat. That's right, folks. It's our annual tradition of putting the previous year in the geek seat. And man, we have a lot to talk about for this last year. It might be a 3-hour show. You never know. You know, there's just so much to touch on for 2017. It was a good year. It was a bad year. We had some great things happen, not so great things. So it'll be a lot of interesting things and should be a lot of fun to talk about. You know, of course, we want to hear from you. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And as we always like to say, we couldn't do this without you. You know, help support the station by subscribing to our shows. We have 26 shows up here on the network. Each one of those are up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and many other places. But of course, please subscribe to Earth Station One. Leave feedback. It takes you just a matter of minutes to leave feedback for us. And, you know, we appreciate it. That's how other people find us. Word of mouth is the best way. You know, you could do all the social media that you want, but if people aren't talking about your show, no one's going to be able to find you. So, you know, please let everybody know about us and such. And while you're at it, please help support the station by going to, of course, the Amazon store up on ESO, which is esopodcast.com. You can go to our Amazon link right there. Click through. I know a couple of people out there got some Amazon gift cards. Shop to your heart's delight, folks. That's what you can do. We also have a wonderful now TeePublic store up there too, where you can get all kinds of neat ESO t-shirts. And then when I say ESO, it's Earth Station One or ESO Network, not Elder Scrolls Online, which some people have been referring to lately. So, you know, definitely don't want to be confused with that. So, you know, definitely help support us. We really would appreciate it. I hope everyone has a fantastic New Year's. Let's kick 2017 to the wayward curb and let's bring on 2018. My name is Mike Faber. As always, it's my pleasure to talk to you. Happy New Year, and we'll see you in around the corner. Peace. And we're done.
Yay.
Yay.
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.